It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown preacher.
Beautiful people, Unknown Preacher LA. It's me, your boy Lonzo, with my pal, my sister, Tatiana. What's happening, T?
I'm trying to placate this child. It's not working, but.
Yeah, it is. Michael's quiet.
No. It's no. We're hanging on by a thread over here.
Michael, what's happening, man? But, yeah. God is so good, man. So listens are going up. And again, I thank God and my amazing team. That means you too, T. And do you think that clickbait is a good thing or a bad thing?
Clickbait? No. First of all, you tried to get me with clickbait.
Yeah. How so?
So you should know based on that how I reacted to that.
You do complain. That's misleading. That title misleading.
Exactly. Using a title that is not indicative of what is actually in the video just to get people knowing that most people are only going to read the title.
Yep.
They're not going to read the full article. They're not going to watch the thing. Whatever your caption is, they're just going to go by that. So that, I don't like that.
I think it depends. So, like, and you know, I'm gonna say I like it in some cases because I think it contributes to some of our listens going up because of, like, after an episode when you're putting a sound bite, you pick out certain words, and it's like, the antennas go up. Let me see what this is about. And then they go to the show, so it can be a marketing tool, right?
I feel like you're, I don't know. Okay, let me see. I just Googled the definition of clickbait.
Okay.
And it says content whose main purpose is to attract attention and encourage visitors to click a link to a particular webpage. Using that definition, I feel like what you're saying makes sense.
So,
but I feel like,
mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I was going to say, I feel like when I hear that term used, It is not with pure intentions that people have, that they're trying to get you to go to something. So I think I have more of a negative connotation with that terminology than this. It's like, we just want you to click the link. Like, so yeah, then it just sounds like marketing. I feel like I'm like, I don't know, like some malintentions.
It's 21st century marketing. I do believe that there are some nefarious intentions, but you know your boy Google. So, as I always do, so I Google words that like will draw people in when there's an intent to clickbait. Now, this is what was interesting to me, and I want to see what you said. So, the word secret, doesn't that sound like, let me see what's going on.
It ain't a secret, because if it is, it ain't going to be all over the internet.
Hidden. What nobody.
Just give me the whole list.
All right. What nobody tells you. The truth about. You won't believe. This is why. And behind the scenes. So it looks like it's like the beginning of a sentence. Like there's cut off. And so you're like. You said it's all lie.
I said most of it is. Those words sound exactly like some of that stuff you can send to me. The. Hidden thing of we got some new secret information about a thing, and then you watch the video, and it's like you at no point in this
nothing
provided anything of that nature. So you have absolutely got me with that. But so I mean, yeah, I've been scammed, I guess. But I wouldn't probably. I don't know if I would even click stuff like that if it wasn't somebody directly sending me to watch it. Actually, personally,
yeah, you don't like long. Like you'll be like 8 minutes.
I'm not watching no 8 minute video. First of all, you need to get to your point. If this is not a TV show, you need to get to your point in 3 minutes. 3 minutes or less. Get to your point. You yeah. better have said your point early on in the video. And if you are sending me something and you know that they're not, you need to tell me exactly the time marker to go to. Because, you know, you have also sometimes sent me something that's 14 minutes long. I'm 6-7 minutes in and I'm like, okay, what? And you're like, oh, you only need to watch the first 2 minutes. Now, you know you should have told me that before you let me play this video. And I'm sitting here like, okay, what? Why you got me watching this?
Yeah.
Now I've learned. Go ahead.
I don't know, I'm gonna make another confession. So sometimes sometimes I send you some things I hadn't even watched yet.
You a hot mess.
I'll send it and be like, I'll wait for her to tell me what the deal is.
Club is located at 1409 Cross Street in Raleigh. Stop by Nature's 360 Cafe for your herbs, favorite acai bowls, smoothies, and juices. And join us for Mental Health, Wealth, and Wellness Mondays.
Come get your $25 back.
But nah, that's not terrible. I mean, I'm just, you know, delegating, letting you kind of do the work for me and let me know whether it's good. I don't do it that often, though. Maybe a few times. I think one time you even asked, did you listen to this, watch this yet?
I don't even know if I asked you that.
You look so frustrated now.
I will say what I have done is that sometimes I'll send you a post and I, because a lot of times on social media, I really appreciate that they do this. They'll have like a transcript on the screen. So I can see in writing what it says or like read the words, but I didn't hear the audio.
Yeah.
And so I know what the post is or whatever, but I didn't listen to audio because maybe I wasn't in a position where I could play something out loud. So like, I know something I just sent you the other day and it was funny. And then I watched it. Oh, it was that thing with the CGI dog.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that was hilarious.
And I sent it to you, but I actually hadn't heard it out loud. And then after you watched it, I went back and watched it again with the sound, and it was even better.
Yeah, I'm like, what are they doing?
I'll do that, but I won't. It was so funny.
Yeah, that was a funny one.
Oh, my gosh. But it was not clickbait.
No, that's not clickbait. That was funny. That was a good one. But I did bring it up because I sent you a video of, and you and I have been going back and forth with this for years, I think. And I think Kanye West just delivered the greatest hip hop concert in 2026. And look at the frown on your face. And I sent you a video of that. You didn't acknowledge it. And I'm doing the air quotes, you know, you canceled him. And so I'm like, so maybe we should talk about canceling.
When did you even send it? Did you send that in the text thread or in the social media? I'm trolling.
I sent it in Instagram. And he had the stage looking like the world. He's standing on.
Well, I know you might. I know. I'm aware already of what is going on with his little performance. So
his
I might not. Have, I don't know.
His okay. Little, but he's standing on the world with Lauryn Hill, and I'm like, this is probably the hottest thing I've seen in hip hop in a long time.
Are you trolling me right now?
No, I'm not trolling.
Oh, you serious?
The conversation of this cultural thing called cancel.
But you think that his performance was the hottest thing that you've seen in hip hop in a long time, for real, though?
Yes. Him and Lauryn Hill.
Wow. Okay.
It's nostalgic, man.
Okay. All right.
I mean, two of the greatest lyricists together dropping bars.
Kind of triggered right now, but okay.
So I just want to talk about it because we have talked about people who have been canceled, and my thing is like, when do we show grace, right? And so I just wanted to get your take on this cancel culture, and do we ever give people a chance to redeem themselves?
I guess it depends on who is the we. Because the thing is, here's the thing about cancel culture. Nobody really gets canceled. And you, like, because when people hear canceled, what they hear is like, oh, this person is totally shut out. They don't get any opportunities anymore. Like, people are just done with them. You just ruin their life. It's no forgiveness. But the fact of the matter is, whenever people even use that word about somebody, they still be here after the fact. Their career still be going on. So, like, nobody really, really gets fully canceled. So an individual can cancel somebody, and you have just personally divested from that person. So you're not supporting them anymore. You're not, you know, spending your money on whatever, maybe going to their shows or what have you. But I bet you that show is still going on, which means somebody else is still supporting them, which means that they're not actually just fully canceled. So I'm like, when people are so offended by the concept, I'm like, why are you even offended? It just means that certain individuals are no longer choosing to support this person. They're actually still out there doing what they do. So get over it.
I don't know. So would you say, because I think this country is probably more divided than it's ever been. So to your point, you really can't ever cancel anyone, because for the millions of people who say we're done with this person, they're going to be a million of supporters to say, hey, we'll rock with them. So I think that might be what you're seeing in the output versus, you know, people just saying, hey, I guess I'm thinking more about the redemption piece. Like, there'll be a segment, a group, a special interest group saying we're done with this person. And I don't think they ever get over it. I don't think they say, okay, there's room for us to give you a chance to earn our trust back or do whatever. Now, I will hear
you. I guess.
Okay, go ahead.
No, you go.
I'm just going to say my caveat is this now, because you and I have talked about, and I do want to thank the listeners who said we both had enough courage to talk about this. Now, I'm excluding sexual predatory behavior from this list. Not saying that everyone doesn't deserve grace, but I'm just going to exclude that part. But in general, someone says something out of pocket, or they were drunk, or they said something about a group of people, now they're canceled, and that group is offended, and there's usually no grace after that. Why are you frowning?
Because I don't think that it's fair to ask groups who have been offended by somebody's behavior, if they're part of a community that has been harmed by somebody's behavior, to ask them to give that person grace. I think that's a ridiculous request. And also back to just like the notion of a certain subset of people, using the Kanye West example, the show at SoFi Stadium was sold out. And that is a huge stadium. So it's not like it's, a little niche group that is still supporting Kanye. The place was sold out. Like, Dave Chappelle, when he had his controversial statements about the trans community, he had an entire set that was anti-trans, that was anti-woman, that was, you know, sexist. He didn't say anything positive about any individual group that he named during that set, and then continued to have more Netflix comedy specials after that, continue to go on tour. People are still continuing to go. So it wasn't, you know,
you support my argument, T.
My argument is that you're not actually canceled. That was my argument the whole time. My
argument is that the group who share his philosophy are the ones who are supporting him. So you're not finding the LGBTQ community saying, okay, I don't care, we're gonna still continue to support Dave Chappelle.
I think there are people who do not agree with what he did that still support him. Because I know of some of those figures who don't agree with what he did and still go to see his show, still watch his stand up, and they're just kind of like, yeah, I don't like that thing that he did, but I still like you. Yeah. And also, I don't think that the entire LGBT community is a niche group.
No, I agree with you. I'll fall back a little on that. into your.
And also, I just want to say before we get too far and I forget that I don't think that this right now is the most our country has ever been divided. We literally had a civil war in our country, and we ain't seen that since. So I would totally.
Modern division. Is that better? Modern division?
I don't know about
civil war.
What's your idea of modern? I hope you mean since 1990, if you mean modern.
No, it's a little older than that.
Well, then, no. We had Jim Crow.
We had Jim Crow, but I don't think our country is... I think this is... We're going to do some research. We'll come back to that. Let's just... Which, that's really not relevant for this, per se. Maybe it is a little.
Not for the idea of cancel culture.
Yeah.
But I just would disagree if this is the most our country has ever been divided. People like to say that. I disagree.
Okay, we'll table that for another discussion because now I'm really curious. I got to pull some
stuff. Literal laws dividing people.
Yeah. But you said it was ridiculous for great to give people grace. Let me make it clear. First, I do believe in accountability. And I guess if someone is apologetic and say, hey, listen, I messed up. I'm asking for your forgiveness. I don't think I know for a fact there have been celebrities who've done that and people say, oh, I don't believe them. And I'm not going to call any names, but you know we've had discussions and you're like, and honestly, I've seen it too myself. But
if you had a publicist write an apology so that you can stop losing money, I don't want to hear it.
Don't know that though. That's
we do know that. We do.
We gotta be better, man. And I'm saying,
I think that it's very unfortunate the groups that are constantly asked to give grace. Like we had the whole N-word BAFTA incident, and we want the Black community to give grace when the BAFTAs put a microphone in front of the man who they know has Tourette's. When the BAFTAs censored certain things but didn't censor that moment and decided to trigger everybody. When this happened multiple times over the course of the night, and everybody wants the Black community to give grace. But then, if somebody says something about a different community that we... you know, ride for a little bit harder, then nobody expects them to give grace. And so I just think that's super lame. Like, you want the most marginalized people to always give grace, but other people, you don't expect them to give no grace.
Well, let me
and I'm not going to even name some of those because then people going to come for me and I don't feel like dealing with it.
No, I got you. And I support that. Let me ask you this, though. What did they do to apologize? Or did they apologize? You just talked about the N-word incident.
Yeah. Well, that individual who actually said the word apologized.
Okay. But what about, you know, because to your point, you brought up some good points about the microphone, not editing it. What did they do?
I want to say that there was a statement. Let me look. I'm the kind of person who I don't care about your little statement because I don't even believe you because you did that on purpose. So,
your little statement.
I don't because it's not genuine at all. You literally you censored Free Palestine, but you chose not to censor somebody being verbally accosted on stage. Like that was on purpose. Don't play with me. I don't want to hear your little statement.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that. I think like an apology is phase one. Like, okay, what's next?
See,
what else have you done? That's what I asked you. That's why I said, what else have they done? And I don't want to get Jesse Jackson on you, but I'm like, okay.
Who do you feel like apologized and then started making atonement beyond the apology?
I'm not going to give company names on here because we don't have their endorsement. But there have been companies.
Well, I'm thinking
like with Jesse Jackson more because he could masterfully go to a company after they wronged the community and he could say, hey, this is what y'all done. Now I need to see y'all invest in us. And I mean, maybe we could call, I could Google some companies, but as of late, I don't want to say that name, but I'll just say they actually ended up hiring a celebrity who became their spokesperson. I heard that they got rid of people on their board. Maybe people know who I'm talking about. You and I have talked about this company. Well, it's been a while back. It's probably been about 5 or 6 years ago. But, so there was an investment. There was.
Can you say it to me right now and just edit it out if you don't want it on air? Because I don't know. I can't respond.
If I'm not mistaken.
And you feel like people are still not.
No.
Their product.
No. I'm just giving you you asked me to give you an example of someone.
But the full statement was give me an example of somebody who made atonement after the apology and still is not gotten grace.
Do you think that they have you gotten past them? You as an individual?
I wasn't really a customer before then, so I'm not a good case study.
That was one of my favorite. Without saying,
well, have you gotten past it? I didn't buy their product, so I can't.
When it happened, I did not buy their product, but.
But do you now?
So why you gotta put me into this?
Because you're saying that once those steps have taken place, that you should be able to get past it and go back to the entity. And I'm trying to say, I feel like if you do more than just a publicist apology and you actually start taking actions, that people do take that seriously and support you. I don't know a case where there was more than just an apology and you actually started doing some real stuff and people didn't take that seriously. Like, for instance, with the NFL and the whole, they had all kinds of racial, equity issues and all this kind of stuff. And they actually started taking actions after people now they never really addressed the Colin Kaepernick of it all, but they started taking actions to try to be more inclusive as an organization. People had said, like, we are boycotting the NFL. The boycott is over. So, like, if you actually take actions instead of just making an apology, but you actually start to do something and put your money where your mouth is, I think people do respond to that.
So what about...
And I looked it up. The Baptist did give an apology.
Okay, thank you.
And there's also been an update that they did a review of the incident and they have revealed the results. I'm not going to read all this while we're on here, but they revealed the results of their review.
Thank you. So what about, and I might have to edit this out, we'll see, when Kevin Hart apologized about some comments he made years ago, and then when he was up to host the Oscars, they came at him again and said, okay, we need you to apologize again. And he said, I've already apologized. He missed out on his opportunity once in a lifetime to host the Oscars.
Okay, but back to my other point, canceling is like, when people talk about cancel culture, they're talking about like a full scale, the industry and the community, customers, consumers have turned their back on you and you're totally shut out. He lost one opportunity. He is still like very much a figure in the entertainment industry as a whole. So he's not canceled.
But that's not fair though. You're like, oh, you got other opportunities though. You'll be all right.
I'm not saying it's fair. I'm saying he's not canceled. Because I do think that if you've already apologized for an incident and you've changed your behavior, then, because the best apology is change behavior. Don't just say something. Actually, then do something. If you have changed your behavior and you we don't need to keep rehashing old issues. I agree with that. So I'm not saying that it's fair that they were trying to behave in that fashion, but I am saying he's not canceled.
Okay. I just think that we need to approach things a little differently and show compassion, love, kindness, and forgiveness.
You gotta forgive everybody. You can say that. That's the unknown preacher LA's take. I do not hold with that take.
Come on, T. Do I have to?
No.
adulterous woman and Jesus when they wanted to stone her. Why don't you look at me like that?
We are but man and flesh. I cannot be Jesus. I can aspire. That's the best I can do.
Yes. So in order to be forgiven, we have to forgive others. And that's the best way to sum it up. All right. Go ahead. Say it before I...
It's a lot of unforgivable stuff that happens out in this world. And I think that we should not just be forgiving people who have not actually taken their own actions towards forgiveness. You just are expected to just forgive. But what was done to acquire the forgiveness? I'm not just out here like, did Hitler ever apologize? But what we were just forgive? Did he change his behavior? Were we just supposed to forgive and forget? No, you have to do something.
We forgive for ourselves. I will tell you this real quick, because this old dude said it, and I never forgot. He said, not forgiving is like making a poison sandwich for someone else and eating it yourself. Because it does. If you look up studies right now, not even forgiving someone eats away at you. It makes it.
I don't feel like me holding things against Nazis is eating away at me. I feel very good. I feel I'm very healthy, and I don't lose any sleep over it.
We will.
More power to you.
Don't keep pushing on.
No preacher is much holier than I, and I accept
that. It's not about that. I know where your heart is.
I have a good heart.
Exactly. That's my point.
If you out here abusing and genociding people, don't be asking me to forgive you.
See. But now, we're going to go to another serious, and this was your idea. I want to give you kudos because it's super, super important. So, I'm going to just let you take the lead on it and talk about...
Well, thank you, but like... No, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, let you talk about Black Maternal Health Week.
Yes. So I wanted to just elevate and take an opportunity to talk about Black Maternal Health Week. This is a week that we celebrate. Well, I don't want to say celebrate, but we amplify every year to try to just bring awareness to... disparities in Black maternal health. So maternal health basically talks about your health during pregnancy, during childbirth, and during the postpartum period in the weeks after birth. And so Black Maternal Health Week in 2026 is April 11th through the 17th. And it starts with the International Day for Maternal Health and Rights. And basically, it's an opportunity for us to raise awareness about the disparities in healthcare and morbidity and mortality for Black women and our children. And so, you know, you'll hear people just kind of sharing information to raise awareness and, you know, advocating for policy reforms, amplifying the stories of people who have been harmed by the healthcare industry as it relates to this, so that we can just, you know, try to change and, you know, be better for our women and our children. So, you know, Black women are just more likely to experience life-threatening complications, are more likely to experience stillbirth and preterm labor, you know, are impacted by fertility and all kinds of things. And so maternal outcomes in the U.S. are just not equal. We have, you know, higher risk of death and complications. And it's largely related to social issues. So there's a framework basically called the social determinants of health. There was a speaker that I actually saw speak recently, and she asked the audience, like, how much of our health issues do you think are actually addressed by the like medicinal sort of healthcare system? And people made their guesses. And I can't honestly, for the life of me, remember what the exact percentage was. But it was like less than 20%. But most of the solutions that we put forth as it relates to dealing with disparities and what have you in health are focused on that, like, medicine and, like, hospital system and, like, that formal healthcare, not the kind of social issues. But we have these social determinants of health that basically focuses on things like education, you know, your economic situation, the environment and the communities that we live in, thinking about, you know, food and food access and stuff like that. Healthcare access and affordability, you know, is one of the things, but there's like other things. And I'm kind of like trying to make sure. Oh, and then like your social and community context. So like your relationships are like, you know, the kind of social capital and that kind of stuff, and making sure that those things are strong in communities. And so thinking about just like Black women's issues, some of the kind of things that influence this is that we know like in the Black community in general, there's disparate health impacts in general. And so like pre-existing conditions and all of that. And so layering that on with pregnancy, it can then make situations worse. Like if you're already in a situation where you have a higher prevalence of things like diabetes, there's also gestational diabetes and like making those kinds of things. Or if you're already dealing with, you know, things like high blood pressure, okay, then that translates into things like preeclampsia in pregnancy. Or if you you know, have mental health or substance use issues, or if you're dealing with like structural issues like racism and that the stress that comes from that, there's been studies that have talked about that stress could be a big factor that influences why Black women are more likely to experience premature labor and delivery and all the kind of societal issues that influence our experiences of stress. So there's just like all kinds of, you know, issues that kind of intersect with this. Yeah. And I wanted to just elevate it because it is, you know, Black Women's Maternal Health Week, and I wanted, you know, listeners to just be mindful about some of these issues.
I'm glad that you thought of this. It's super important to put the spotlight on it and give the exposure. One thing I will tell you from my angle, and I see it, that we really don't talk enough about it, and that's the implicit bias piece of it, because I really think that, well, let me say this, for years now, and I'm implicit bias instructor certified, you know, and I remember one of the initial courses that I took, they talked about how everything is pointing at law enforcement, but there are far more biases in the medical field. And we don't really, I think just now in recent years, we're finally talking about the medical profession. And like now you even see it on TV on all these hospital shows. I'm a fan of The Pit, and they talk about it on there now. And they'll say, you know, I know you know, it's bias against, you know, Black women and, you know, but the biggest thing is listening, I think. I'm not saying the biggest thing overall, but for me, a real big thing is listening when especially Black women are talking about pain they're experiencing, and you just, doctors will ignore because subconscious, and what we mean by implicit bias, they're not even aware. Subconsciously, they have a bias towards a certain individual, a certain group of people. And so, and they studies have shown that they believe Black women can handle pain at a much higher rate. So when a Black woman is saying this, they're pretty much ignoring her. Am I summing that up okay or correctly, T? Because I know you know more about this than I do.
Yeah, and all of that, and I'll just add on to not only just not believing, you know, that you're really suffering as much, there's also an issue of assuming that you're trying to get pain medication because you might, you know, have some kind of drug addiction or something like that, so that you're overstating the pain that you're in because you're drug seeking is another issue.
I totally forgot about that. That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
I was just going to share, there were a couple of studies that showed that white doctors have a perception that Black patients have a higher pain tolerance, are less medically cooperative, and fake chronic pain for the purpose of securing traditional medicine. Studies from as recent as 2017 and 2021 showing that. There was a 2004 John Hopkins public health study that showed that doctors listen less and talk more to their Black patients and to their white patients. So they might not be getting as much information as they need to make a proper diagnosis. They're spending less time with those patients. There was a 2006 study that showed that African-American women under 50 who have breast cancer get sicker, need more aggressive treatment, and are more likely to die than white women. There was a study by, I think it was the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that showed that race is the biggest determining factor in health disparities among people of color. You know, sometimes people try to say, oh, this is a socioeconomic issue and not a racial issue. And they actually, you know, put out a publication and said, actually, race is a determining factor, not these other issues. And also we see that more Black patients report that they experience racial microaggressions from their white doctors. So just like looking at patient experiences, we also see like Black and other people of color patients receive, according to Project Impact, 40% worse healthcare quality measures as compared to white patients. So implicit bias is just like steeped in the healthcare system.
Wow. And then, so now, so many, and not just Black women, Black men too, are hesitant to even go to the doctor in general. And so that's another impact by that. And it's sad because when you think about having a baby, right? And that's supposed to be the happiest moment in your life. And then in those instances, they turn out sometimes to even be tragic because they didn't listen. I'm interested to know, though, did they break it down? You said white doctors. Did they break it down as far as white male doctors or white female doctors? Because I do think there's a difference between, there's a gender factor too, I think, but I'm asking.
Not that I've seen. I could probably find that data and information, but not in these particular studies. They didn't break it down by their sex or gender.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to do better. We have to advocate for ourselves. And I remember my mom taking her, and she had a series of health issues. But my mother, and I think it was generational, whatever they said was the gospel. You know, so sometimes you could be in need and in pain or different things, and you don't really know how to advocate for yourself. And really, we have to learn to advocate for our loved ones too, because they may not be in a position to, you know, speak up. And so we have to be there and step in and ask a lot of questions. Because what I find, I'm a hypochondriac. I ain't even gonna lie to you. My daughter, they come in, they know, and they're always trying to de-escalate the situation with me because I'm asking a million questions. Well, what about this? Well, have y'all tried this? You know, so I'm on top of it, man. And I'm gonna keep doing that, and I'm gonna make them earn that money. I really would love to have a doctor on here to find out if there's an implicit bias training piece now when they're going to medical school. That to me should be great. Now, go ahead. I know what you're going to say.
You don't know what I'm going to say.
Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, there are, you know, certain programs that I've seen elevated who try to talk about this idea of culturally responsive care.
Okay.
It's not like by and large common in just like medical degrees writ large, but there have been like a couple of medical schools who have tried to center you know, having some kind of class or something on culturally relevant care. There is a great book called Legacy by Uche Blackstock. It's, I think the after the colon is like a black doctor reckons with racism in healthcare or something like that. But the primary title, Legacy by Uche Blackstock. She's a doctor. She went to Harvard Medical School. This book came out in, I think, 2024. And she talks about like her experience at Harvard and how lacking it was. And this is a recent book, and she did not, you know, go to medical school that long ago. You know, in a year she graduated, you know, in a year that definitely started with a two for sure. Yeah. But I can't remember what exactly she talks in the book about what years that she went to. It might have been 2010 or something like that. But she just talks about the continued prevalence of these issues and how they don't educate on stuff like that in medical school programs. And Harvard is seen as like one of the best. So, and even in her class, she had like one of the most diverse classes I think it was the most at the time that she was there in Harvard's medical school history. And they still only had 10%, black medical students, you know, when she was a student there. And that was like the most. So, and I'm really hoping that I'm remembering that statistic correctly, because I'm just doing this off memory because I didn't think to bring up like notes or anything from when I read that book.
That is very informative. I appreciate that. And I do think, like, I don't know if I want to say the buy-in or receiving this well, but I want Caucasian listeners, other people, because what will happen is we're throwing it out there. There's no animosity involved. And I think receiving it is the first hurdle. And people will shut down because they think you're labeling them and saying, hey, you're a racist because of A, B, and C. But no, there's no animosity. We all have biases. And so we were built that way for survival reasons. So when you see someone, you immediately come to a conclusion, right? And so be open, because every voice matters. And this is a moral issue that it's taking too long for us to even get to this point, because like I said before, I think around 2014 was when you were hearing it in law enforcement. And now I think maybe 2020, 2021, you started really hearing about it in the medical profession, but we already knew it existed, but very few were open. That's all I got, T.
All right. Well, I will just add one last thing, which is that I want us to, and when I say us, I'm meaning women, to prioritize like what you need, especially if you are somebody who still has children in front of you, or if you have grandchildren that might be coming soon. Think about things like hiring a doula. A doula is somebody who is there to advocate for you and what you need during your pregnancy and postpartum experience. They can be in the delivery room with you so that you don't have to be worrying about trying to advocate. Make a birth plan, write out ahead of time what you want your birth experience to look like. Give a copy of that birth plan to whomever is going to be doing your birth. You know, be open to a non-hospitalized birth. For so many centuries, hospitals were not our primary location of giving birth. But then, you know, medical schools got, you know, Western medical school ideologies got involved. And now that has been amplified as like, oh, give birth in the hospital, even though most births don't require any kind of medical intervention. Be open to going if you do end up in a situation where you're requiring medical intervention. But there's birthing centers, there's home births. And most births, you know, go smoothly and you don't end up needing those kinds of things. Think about a midwife and having that kind of resource available. Look into culturally relevant care. Know your rights. There have been multiple cases that have come out in the news recently of Black women like in the ER who were in active labor and the staff are just ignoring them. Those have like gone viral. Women were kicked out of the ER, the delivery room, told, oh, you're not, and then they drive away and had to, you know, give birth in the car or something because they were, you know, put out and all that kind of stuff. No, you're right. Ask the questions that you need to ask to make the best and most informed decision about where you want to have your birth experience, and have a team if you have the resources available to secure a team around you who can support and advocate for you and your needs.
Wow, you just dropped some nuggets, T. I really, really appreciate that. Man, to our listeners, please take heed to the words you just shared. Really consider, you know, and think about your life, your baby, and what steps you need to take to ensure that you're heard, you're seen, and you're properly taken care of. T, that's all I have. I appreciate you as always. Man, any other words before I talk about my guest?
No, talk about the guest.
So this brother right here, I think I talked about him before. He was on an event that I promoted, and he really his approach is to merge science and religion. He shows the overlap where science is now confirming things that we've read in the Bible. He's doing a whole lot of good stuff in the community. Even there's a rap dynamic to his science. And man, the listeners are going to love Professor Flowers. Man, he is on it.
Well, I know you told me he's from Chicago, so ask him what does he think is the best fried chicken spot in Chicago, and I'm going to judge him based on the response.
The best fried chicken spot?
Yes, in Chicago.
All right, I'll put that down. So
through the west side, and also ask if the west side or the south side makes the best fried chicken. They recently asked the mayor of Chicago that question and put him in the hot seat. So you can ask him that as well, the west side versus south side question.
West side versus south side. So I'm bringing on this highly educated professor on it. I'm going to ask him about fried chicken. Okay.
Cool. Yes, you are. Yep. And they better have a scientifically and biblically sound reason as to the answer.
Oh, I like that. I'm going to say it to him, what you said. All right, y'all. When we come back, Professor Flowers, T, I appreciate you. I'll see you next time.
So Tap In is a events ticketing / artist promoting platform. There's three features that come with Tap In, which is really awesome. One, we make it easy to discover events that are in your local area. Also, for artists who are, you know, event planners or organizers who want to sell tickets to their events, we make sure that you keep 100% of your ticket sales. Number two, we wanted to make sure that artists can build a community around themselves and their events. And then number three, a lot of times you'll hear an artist say, visit my website, visit my portfolio, take this QR code. Well, we wanted to make it easy and actually add those portfolios and websites into the app so that it's all in one place. Mm-hmm. So consider it like almost like a one-stop shop for artists and event organizers and planners. Is available to download and use. It is on both Apple Store and Google Play Store.
Beautiful people, we are back. Hey, this is going to be powerful, y'all. I am so honored because I'm not just interviewing a professor. Your boy sitting down with someone who lives at the intersection of faith, grief, hip hop, science, and purpose, man. And what I like about the job, y'all hear me say it over and over again, is that I get to talk to the man or the woman behind the resume. And so I want to start with honoring his intellect and humanity. So, ladies and gentlemen, he was the first African-American male selected for the University of Chicago's post-baccalaureate research education program at the National Institute of Health, the first African-American to earn an NIH Minority Health International Research Training Fellowship at the University of Cambridge, a master's degree in biotechnology and chemical science from Roosevelt University, studying in the pharmacy school at UNC Chapel Hill, and he founded and developed the study of STEM subjects with hip-hop music through his organization, Brain Stemology. Ladies and gentlemen, Professor Alex Flowers. What's up, my brother?
What's up, Preacher? Thank you for that great introduction. Now it got me feeling like my grandfather back in the day. Going to a visiting church, and you know, he got his legs crossed as they read his bio. So I gotta match that energy that you brought.
Brother, I gotta give you your props. When you come on this show, man, I'm all about recognizing those accomplishments. And it's funny because you probably don't even, I hear it oftentimes, you know, you hear your resume being read and you're like, wow, I did all this stuff. How? Brother, yeah. It's an honor to have you home, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Preacher.
Yeah, man. Hey, so I want to ask you right off the gate, because you've accomplished so much. And then when you look at it from when you look at the stats, you know, statistically, you weren't supposed to do what you're doing. So, but when you strip it all away, who is Alex Flowers at the core?
I want to say first, a humble person. Yes. One of my favorite scriptures said that it's your reasonable service. Your reasonable service. What's your reasonable service? To serve others, to give back, to pay it forward. That's my reasonable service. First seek the kingdom of God, and everything else should be added unto you. That's truly my testimony and truly my life experience.
Man, that's awesome. I love that answer, man. And before we get a little deeper, so my co-host, we were on here talking, and she is from Chicago as well. And she said, hey, I'm going to test my brother. She said, you need to ask him who has the best fried chicken. What's the best fried chicken spot in Chicago? And then she hit with another. Go ahead. What you got to say?
We're gonna say Harold's. I'm saying Harold's.
Okay.
South side of Chicago, so it's going to be Harold's for me.
See, and then she said west side or south side? You said south side?
South side. South side forever.
I think she's going to agree with you, brother. I think she is, man. That's what's up. Hey, man, tell us about Brain Stemology, man. I love the title. I love the name of that, too.
Man, wow, that was God-given. I'm sitting in class in pharmacy school. And a teacher, my anatomy physiology teacher, played a video. Students were nervous about an upcoming exam, and it was for neurobiology. And we're learning about all the nerves in the body, and probably our nerves was on being so nervous for his exam. And so the teacher played a YouTube video, and the YouTube video had four guys. Three of them were white, and one of them was black. And they started rapping about the nervous system, about the nerves in the body.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting in the front of class, and I literally started laughing. Like, I started laughing because I was like, whoa. I was like, wait, hold up. I was like, first, the bars was cheesy. It was very elementary bars. It was like A, B, C, D, E, you know, definition, you know, bars. Yeah. There was no metaphors in it, and I was just like, nah, this ain't right. And then the beat wasn't right, but and then of course the demographic wasn't right. I was like, that's my culture. Yeah. And it's only one guy of African American heritage that's on there. I said, and then a light bulb went off immediately, and it made me reflect on being back in Chicago, South Side. Being in my science and math class in 7th and 8th grade and kicking it with my guys, kicking it with my homies. And that's what we did. We took information I took personally information that I had in my classes, and I put it into rhyme form. And so I'm rapping with my guys in a lunchroom or in the gym. And I was doing it all the way up to high school, rapping, using information I learned in the classroom. And it made me think of Wu-Tang, made me think of GZA the Genius, it made me think of Method Man and KRS-One and all the people I grew up with hip-hop culture. And I said, you know what? That's how I can get more minorities to pursue careers in the health sciences, is using hip-hop culture. And I thought about the people that I met on my journey, like Dr. Chris Emden, big hip-hop head in academia. And I knew that hip-hop was a way that we can actually make it relatable to my peers, to see reflections of themselves in STEM and change the narrative when it came to hip-hop culture.
Man, that is what's up. You are so... I'm like you, brother. I'm true hip hop. I grew up in it. You have to understand, like, you were dropping some names, and you know, some of our listeners probably couldn't even relate to what you just, the knowledge you just shared on that, man. That's and then I talked about you being on an event that I promoted with Pastor Holland, but you were at another event. You and I were at the same event where I shared some spoken word, but you dropped some, you and another dude, y'all dropped some bars, and I thought, I was just so impressed how you were, it was a freestyle, man.
Yeah.
And I just, man, that's what I'm talking about, man. Good stuff. You also talked about listening to this. That's what I was going to ask you. You said it was one African-American in that group. And I know you've attended some elite academic spaces, right? And,
yes, sir.
Did you ever feel like you didn't belong?
Sure. That's a great question. I would say to you early on, in middle school, I went to Emmanuel Christian School, founded by Dr. and Reverend Mrs. Curry. And it was majority all Black, you know, teachers and students. And I felt at home. That's where I got my foundation in science and math and winning science fair competitions. Got to high school, Morgan Park High School. Everyone probably know of Dr. Mae Jamerson. The first, you know, Black female astronaut. We graduated from the same high school. Great pedigree from Morgan Park, being an alumni there. But then going to St. Xavier University, a Catholic university, majority, I was the only African-American in all my classes, especially in chemistry or biology, unless it was a nursing student. Some of the nursing students were, you know, African-American, but they're Black females. But as far as biology majors or chemistry majors, yeah, it was typically I'm the only one. And so feeling like you belong, I felt like that's where I was a little bit different. I made myself belong. I didn't ask for permission. I was going to be myself regardless of what, you know, what university I was at. So I felt at home, you know, being at, you know, predominantly white institutions, but I definitely believe that having the opportunity to you know, go to school at an HBCU would have been a great opportunity in my journey. But yes, I've definitely had to deal with that idea of, like, do you really belong? And I said, yeah, you know, I made myself belong here.
I love that. Two things stood out. The first, you mentioned the sisters in that too, because, you know, the most educated group of people in America, right? But as far as African-American men, you talking about really being the minority.
Yes, sir.
That environment. That's really big. The other thing you said, how you made yourself along. I love that. Who do you?
Hey guys, I'm happy to share with you that we are hosting a STEM hip hop camp for the town of Fuquay. You go on their website for the town of Fuquay and register for BAM. BAM stands for Building Molecule. Kids will have the opportunity to build neurotransmitters, amino acids, DNA strands with their friends, listening to music, learning the chemistry that's in the music that they listen to. Go register. We'll have some fun together. And also on our website, you can follow us at www.brainstomology.com as well as manifest.com. And follow me on my Instagram page, Professor DOC Scholar, and you'll be able to learn everything about our programming, our summer camps, and even our gear, our clothes, our hoodies, our hats. That's all hip-hop related, STEM related, for the family, for everyone. And I'll see you guys soon. Peace.
Yeah, I want to say my grandfather, Reverend Dr. I.W. Williams in Chicago. So streets are named after my grandfather.
Wow.
Honorary. So my grandfather, so from 70, so my home church was on 78th and Low in Chicago. I lived on Low, 97 and Low, lived right across the street from my grandparents on the same block of with two of my aunts. So basically I felt like Low was my home, regardless of church or the house. So my grandfather really instilled that value of making sure that you feel welcome wherever you go. He was known for his dress, his style. He wasn't typical. When he would go into places, it was always shirt and tie or bow tie. Yeah. I never saw a day where he was just in regular clothes. And so my grandfather always told me that even if I dressed in hip hop attire, I need to own it and don't be a follower. You need to be a leader. So I contribute that DNA from my grandfather, my mother, and my father as well.
Man, I love it. I love it. I was doing a little bit of research because I thought about this too. I had a friend and he wrote his term paper on hip hop back in the day. And the professor, they basically, he got an F because they didn't recognize his music. And so nowadays, I think that would be different. But doing my research, you said something that's powerful. You said hip hop is academic. So why do you think society has separated intelligence from hip hop?
Sure. I would say, you know, I'm an 80s baby. So I grew up, like you said, on KRS-One, Po-Righteous Teachers, Special Ed, Method Man, you know, Abstract, you know, The Tribe. And looking back, they all had names that were academic. Guru, even from Gangstar, was academic. And it just seemed that the media kind of changed the narrative to celebrate more gangster music. And especially in the 90s, artists that I grew up listening to, like I said, Wu-Tang at that time was just coming out. And some of my friends did not necessarily like Wu-Tang because they were like, oh, man, they on a checker box. They fighting on a chessboard. They wearing ninja costumes. Like, what is this? You know, they love the Dr. Dre's. They love the Snoop's, the NWA. And I wasn't saying that I didn't like that music. It's just that I enjoy, you know, the old school, you know, who my older cousins were listening to. And so it felt like the narrative was pushed to make hip hop not academic. And so once I got into college, I definitely didn't ever see hip hop being implemented unless it was like nursery rhymes that we were growing up in school, middle school, high school. But in college, it just seemed that hip hop wasn't academic. It was a gimmick. It was used as a gimmick if you were using an academic space. And I want to change that whole narrative of how people relate to hip hop music, because many might say that they don't like hip hop music or they don't rap. And I tell them all the time, you do rap. You just don't know about it or just realize that you rap. You know, every time you have a conversation with someone, you're rapping. Rap was, you know, a slang. My elders would say to me sometimes, "Hey, young blood, let me rap to you." We weren't talking about beats and bars. They were talking about information. They were talking about knowledge that they wanted to give to me. So I was very thankful for my upbringing. But yes, definitely, I wanted to change the whole narrative when it came to hip hop culture. So within Brainstomology, I said, looking back on it, DJing was physics. You know. You graffiti, that's chemistry. B-boys, it's geometry. MCing, that's scientific communication. All of these different elements are within our culture and how we communicate information to one another. It's very aligned with what I witness in academic spaces. And so I said, I need to merge that and show the correlation between both the street and the classroom.
Man, that's so deep, so deep. The brilliance behind it, the music, and to your point about like watering it down, like I just always loved how clever, you know, an MC can put lyrics together. Like you just said, the metaphors, the puns.
Yep.
And, I mean, it's just, it's not easy. I mean, when you listen to it, and there's a definitely an art behind it. And you just,
it's an art and science.
Yes. Speaking of which, because I was impressed last year at the event, you referenced how in the Bible, you know, Jesus used dirt and saliva to heal a blind man. And now you were talking about how science has actually really revealed that the truth behind that. And I'm going to let you take it from there because you're the expert.
Sure. I think one topic that I learned while I was doing, I'm in the lab at the University of Chicago. So I'm back in Chicago in the lab. And I was thinking about how does, you know, the Bible relate to science? Because sometimes I had professors who weren't believers, who would challenge, you know, my faith in growing up. And sometimes even myself, I asked those questions. And I remember just asking God that, you know, I believe in you, but I need to see it as well. I need to be able to communicate it to others. And I believe science is you and show it to me. And sure enough, there was the scripture about, you know, Esau and Jacob, you know, wrestling in the womb, right? And I thought, how interesting that the Bible speaks very clearly by saying that they were fighting in the womb. Like, what type of insight did you have to believe that and to write that, right? And stand on it, stand firm on it. And it wasn't until 2015, I'm down here in North Carolina, I'm in pharmacy class, but came on my newsfeed was an article about a doctor who was doing an MRI. And during his MRI, he caught a rare footage of two twins fighting in the womb, like literally fighting in the womb. And literally my mouth dropped. And I was like, my mind went immediately back to the scripture, went back to the word. So like I said, I got the word with me. Like it went back to this book. And I was like, wow, you know, in Genesis 25, 27, he was talking about them fighting in the womb, how they were going to become two different nations, and explaining it, you know, to her, God explaining this information to her. And I said, now science is just catching up. Science is just now catching up to what we already read in the Bible. And they didn't have that technology to know that. So that for me was confirmation that we can believe the word as scientific. As in our textbooks, we should, as believers, have that level of faith where you go before just believing an idea to knowing an idea. Like me and you just met for the first time, and I'm like, I think his name is the Unknown Preacher. If somebody asked me on the street, I think his name is the Unknown Preacher. But now me and you've had several conversations back and forth, texting each other, you know. I should not now be saying I believe his name is the Unknown Preacher. I should be saying I know his name is the Unknown Preacher. And that's where God got me as far as my faith, to say, now I need you to grow up. Now I need you to take these stories that you heard in the Bible that sometimes you were taught were like, you know, story tales or Bible tales, and, you know, from, you know, Sunday school, and realize that I was actually giving you science. I was teaching you the mysteries of who I am, so that you can not only believe it, but you can know it and you can stand on it.
Amen, amen. And wouldn't it be just so, man, just wonderful if you could take those principles and that philosophy and just across the board, just educate that in that manner. So, but if you could redesign the education system, what would you change first?
Wow, that's a heavy question. For one, you saw it on that day that we were at the church. Yes. I created what's called Sunday School Science Symposium.
Yeah.
I wanted to merge some of those stories that we heard in the Bible, some of those biblical tales that we heard in the Bible that we had questions about, and I wanted to break it down further and say, what does the textbooks, you know, and academia tells about this information or validates it? So we can have a discussion, we can have a debate, we can actually break it down and say, what do we know or what do we not know? And so I believe as an education system, there have been so many amazing people who have contributed to academia who were left not being represented inside the textbooks, that you didn't hear their stories or hear their accomplishments, and history kind of just erased them, unfortunately. And I believe, like I was sharing at that event, that there are many people, especially African-Americans in the STEM field, whose stories we never heard, and they contribute so much to the knowledge that we actually are building on right now, that we're even seeing right now today. You know, everybody's watching what's happening in space, what's happening about the reentry coming back into space. But there were African, you know, Katherine Johnson was the reason why the first, you know, got on the moon, were able to walk on the moon because of her calculations of helping them get to space and helping them get back to Earth. Without her calculations, that hidden figure, we didn't learn about Katherine Johnson until the movie came out.
Uh-huh.
Why wasn't her story in our textbooks when we were in school? That could have inspired us to pursue careers that we never thought we could do. So thankfully, we are learning about that now. So I believe if education would push that more to share about, to be equitable and to share about people from all different, you know, life directions and how they contribute to science, I believe it can be a better world for all of us.
Amen. Amen. You know, representation matters, and actually seeing people who look like you accomplish these things, it gives us, because there are so many people I know who are just super talented and they don't even see the gem that they are, right? And I just remembered it because you and your wife said you wanted to be like the Huxtables, and I was thinking about this episode that I don't know if you remember it, but they found some weed in Theo's
bag.
And Theo went out of his way just to prove to them
he was pissed.
He was upset. He went and got this tough, the guy who could have beat him silly, made him come back to the house. That's how important his dad's, you know, trust meant to him and respect.
Absolutely.
And so that episode has always stood out to me like a father and son. And like, I want my son to really say, man, my dad, I want his respect. I want him to, you know, I don't want him to do what I want him to do, but I want my opinion to matter. And it matters because I'm being a good father and I'm, you know, setting a good example. And so when you said you and your wife want to be like the Huxtables, I thought about that and what we just talked about now. And so having someone believe in you when you didn't believe in yourself, you know, so.
That hits really, really deep for sure. Cause when I met her, the first thing I asked her in the cafeteria was what she wanted to be. And she said, the president of the United States.
Wow.
And I chuckled, I laughed, and she went off. And she was like, she gave me that look like, what you laughing about? And I was like, wait, hold on. I was like, I'm laughing not because it's funny. I'm laughing because I had that episode in my head of the Cosby, you know, him being a medical doctor, her being a lawyer. And I was like, I asked her, I said, okay, how are you going to get there? And she said, I want to go to law school. I want to work in politics and then become president. So I was like, that wasn't something you just, you know, shut out the blue. You know, that was something you strategically building to get to. And I was like, I know that is the person I want to be connected with for the rest of my life. So I was laughing because I was like, okay, God, you heard my prayer. You knew what I wanted in a wife and you're presenting it to me right here. So yeah, I was very honored to have that experience with her.
Man, I love that story right there, man. And y'all are a power couple, by the way. So
thank you, man.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, Dan. How do you balance being a visionary with being present for your family?
Sure. It's really about our faith walk. Me and my wife, we learned the meanings of our name when we were in college. So I never knew the meaning of my name was Defender of Mankind. And then her name is Kisandra. And we were looking up her name, and Kisandra is, you know, Sandra is another female version of Kisandra. And we found out that Sandra also means Alexander. And so we were like, wait, hold up. Dang. Both our names mean the same thing, Defender of Mankind. And I told her, I said, I feel like, you know, we have a purpose-driven life. And I told her, I said, I believe that you're going to be defending mankind from the law side, and I'll be defending mankind from the medical side. And so I believe we approached very early in getting to know each other that our lives wasn't just about having a family and just, you know, going on vacations and, you know, just building out dreams. We were creating a future, a legacy to pass down to the next generation that was going to be so important that we wanted our children, our grandchildren to be able to say, this is what grandpa and grandma did, you know, in their day. Just like I look up to my grandfather and my grandmother, I wanted to have that same type of relationship with my wife when it came to the direction of our family. And I'm so thankful that we've been able to build that, not just in Chicago, but even coming down here to North Carolina.
Amen, brother. Amen. And let me ask you this. Can hip-hop heal trauma?
Absolutely. Hip-hop can heal trauma. And the way I'm excited to share about that, because God gave it to me a couple of years ago, and I finally put it out there, and it was accepted by a national organization, and it's now being used at a conference called Stronger Together Conference to tackle Black youth between the ages of 13 and 25 suicide prevention in North Carolina. And so when I went to a cypher, right, we get into like a semicircle and we all rapping. And when I was in that cypher, God was speaking to me. He was like, look at everyone in this cypher and see them in the medical field. And I was like, wait, we get in this like semicircle when we're on rounds in the hospital. When we go on rounds in the hospital, we're in like in a semicircle.
A huddle.
And it's the nurse. Yeah, we're like a huddle. It's like the nurses, the doctors, it's the residents, it's you know, the chaplain, you know, whoever is in that room at that time talking to that patient. And God said to me, you're having a cipher on rounds. And I was like, wait, okay, we have a cipher on rounds. Okay, this is dope. And he said, look at the word therapy again. Look at it. And I'm looking at the words and I'm like, okay, what am I missing? And he said, you can't spell therapy without rap.
Wow.
Almost lost it. Almost lost it, preacher. Almost lost it, because I was like, wow, right in the middle is rap. And then he said, play around with the words again. You a chemist. And I said, okay. And he said, shift those letters. And I was like, oh, C-H-E-Y. They rap. They therapy. They rap. And I was like, oh, basically, that's what we do when we are in a cipher. It's therapy. It's a therapy session. We're communicating our highs, our lows to one another. We're encouraging each other. You know, when we're in a cipher, some people can't afford to have a healthcare provider. So they go to the cipher and they're communicating their traumas, you know, in a cipher, and they're being supported by other creators and other, you know, just everyday people in a cipher, just having fun. And I said, wow, it was always there. Medicine was right there in the cipher. That's why it's a living organism in the cipher, and it gravitates to so many people when they see a cipher actually happening, and they want to join in, even if they don't know how to rap. Yeah. Sometimes they just want to listen or just stand around. And so I said, that is why I believe hip hop is so academic. It's not just a music form that we listen to. Hip hop was always academic from its foundation. Basically, even when we call it the elements, you know about DJing, MCing, graffiti, B-boys, those are elements. Why did they call them elements? Because they were thinking about chemistry. It is very linked to chemistry, to the periodic table. And I was saying that brainstemology is that fifth element. It's that one that people don't talk about the most, and that's knowledge. And when it comes back to the scripture, when it comes back to the word, we always was taught that the first thing that was most important in the word was knowledge. Knowledge is power. And that knowledge and that wisdom, that comes from God. And we know how God sent hip hop has been to our community and how it's uplifted so many people out of despair. So truly, hip hop is therapy. It is medicine. And we need to change the narrative that some people have used hip hop in such a negative way.
Yeah, well said. Well said, man. And if there is a young African-American male listening right now who feels like he doesn't belong, and I'm talking about in classrooms, I mean, in general, like the ones, like the environments you've been in, what would you say to that person?
Wow. So I would go back and just really say to them, like I would say to myself, right? I felt like I was that person. That was that loner in the classroom. Like I can be friends with everybody, but sometimes I can just be good just by myself. Yes. You have to first believe in you. If you don't believe in you, then it's going to be hard for others to believe in you. So that's the first thing. And that belief comes from your walk, having good mentors, to have on your journey, meditation, prayer. Those are all keys in my journey of finally believing in myself and believing in who I was ordained to be, who God was calling for me to be. And after I got that knowledge about who Alex is, it was easy now to go into different spaces and just be myself. Not trying to compete against anyone, not looking at anyone, trying to be better than anyone, but saying I'm the standard. I'm my own standard. So if I'm my own standard, I'm not looking for a validation from anyone else. My only validation comes from God. And if God gives me the mission, it gives me the list of what he needs me to do, and I'm accomplishing that, then I'm good. I don't have to be, you know, challenging someone else. I can support you. I can applaud all of your accomplishments while I'm doing my own. So to that person that's in, you know, in that classroom or in school or just having a hard time believing in themselves, that was the first thing that I would tell them, is to, you know, strengthen your walk in Christ, get good mentors on your journey, whether it's a man, female, pastor, preacher, teacher, get someone on your journey and continue to just believe in yourself. And allow God to give you the knowledge that will allow you to make a difference in this world. because once you do that, the sky's the limits.
Hey, man, young people, take heed, man. I really pray that they pay close attention and listen carefully to everything you just said, because those were nuggets, man. Thank you, brother. You've been such a blessing as always. I have all my guests. I give them the floor to get to share the last words, promote any events. If you want to talk about your foundation, anything you want to talk about, I'm passing the mic to you, man.
All right. So, yeah, we're working towards a program in June. It's called Manifest. It's a music, art, networking festival, STEM festival. It's a 2-day event where you get to learn about culture through science, through technology, through engineering, through math, through hip hop culture. And we're really excited about it because this is our 6th year that we're doing it in Fuke Wave Arena. It was the first time that Fuke Wave Arena was celebrating Juneteenth when we did it 6 years ago, and we continue to grow. We continue to get organizations involved in celebrating our culture. But what makes our Juneteenth different than any of the others is our STEM component. So you're going to learn the science and the art behind hip hop culture. We're going to always challenge viewpoints that you have. And as well, we're going to make it collaborative. So you get to collaborate with others. You get to get mentorship. You get STEM networking opportunities with professionals and different career paths. So you never know who you will meet by coming to Manifest. So on June 19th and the 20th in Fuke Wave Arena, you do not want to miss it this year. We're looking forward to all the activities that's going to be happening right here in Fuke Wave Arena.
Hey, man, it's going to be fire, man. I appreciate you, brother. Ladies and gentlemen, Professor Alex Flowers, brother, thank you so much. You always have a seat on the Unknown Preacher LA, man.
Appreciate it.
Peace.
Don't forget to follow the Unknown Preacher LA podcast. We're on all podcast platforms.
It's the unknown. Unknown. It's the unknown. Unknown Preacher. The unknown.